This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
It is Long Shots, VSiN's golf betting podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown and Wes Reynolds. We are without one, Kelly Bidlin. The weather here in Vegas got the best of Kelly Bidlin, Wes. The old migraines have kicked in. I woke up last 2 days to 36 degrees, which is unacceptable in Las Vegas after them teasing us with these 70 degree days last week and whatnot. I'm actually feeling a little bit of the sinuses here, but flu game. I'm in. I'm good to go, buddy.
Yeah, you and me both. I've got a little bit of the sniffles here. Not that my brethren back in Indiana that has been buried under snow and below zero temperatures, I tell them, yeah, it gets kind of chilly out here. It's been down here in the low 30s and not getting much sympathy. But we soldier on here for the Farmers Insurance Open and what is going to be very nice weather conditions in San Diego this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be perfect over there in La Jolla. Cannot wait to watch this thing as we get the return of Brooks Koepka. I'm sure there will be no fanfare around that at all down there as he looks to play his way into some of these signature events. Of course, he doesn't get the automatic qualification and all of that with everything. We have you guys with us two podcasts ago. You know how this all went down, the $5 million fine thing, and doesn't get part of the rev share and everything else with all of that. But nonetheless, Brooks Koepka back on the PGA Tour. And apparently, you know, pretty happy about it from what you read from all the people that have been able to talk to him about it, Wes. But we get a really good field here, as you mentioned, really good weather, a course that we are familiar with. This feels like the first real kind of handicap of the season.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And Brooks being back, seemingly it seems like he's been welcomed back by most of the players. You know, hey, good to see you out here again. I know Billy Horschel and a lot of the guys were talking to him at the practice round yesterday. So Brooks Koepka making his return this weekend. We do have a good field, and fortunately for bettors and also players alike, we don't have Scottie Scheffler in this field. Yes. As he once again cruises to a victory at 3-1 at the American Express. Now, number 20, by the way, so officially a lifetime member of the PGA Tour, because if you win 20 events, you get that exemption. That was a mere formality, considering the fact that he's now won 14 times in his last 35 PGA Tour starts.
Yeah.
40%. Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, I feel bad. It's like I feel bad not giving him his flowers at the top of the show. Scottie Scheffler deserves it. If it had been anyone else that won, that's how we lead off the show. And instead, because it's Scottie, it has to get slipped in ever. But I mean, it's just, you know, Wes, one day we'll do a podcast that isn't featured, you know, strictly around betting, where we can just debate some topics and stuff like that. But I mean, I know the pure numbers when you put him side to side with Tiger still favor Tiger, and I get all of that. But if we're talking about just as impressive wins, the fields are this I will not debate, people. Like, the fields are deeper now than they were when Tiger was on his run. And mm-hmm. So, yes, Tiger's actual play, when you look at the raw numbers, better than Scottie. I get all that. But Scottie is having to go beat a much, much, much deeper, a much more talented, a much more skilled field every single time that he tees it up. And I just, you know, I look at this run, Wes, where everyone's hitting it farther. Everyone's dialed in from head to toe with the exact ball and the exact specs and the hole. They know their club head speed down to the tenth of a whatever and all of this. And Scottie still just goes out there and freaking beats them damn near every time that he tees it up.
He certainly does, and against a really good field at the American Express. I'm trying to pinpoint to the second in terms of how much of a glimmer of hope I had with Ryan Gerard, who made a nice little run on Sunday. I think it was maybe about 5 seconds, where it's like, yeah, maybe something could happen, but Scottie closed the door. Ryan Gerard ends up finishing T2, so that gives me a runner-up, and he now has three runner-ups, by the way, in his last three worldwide starts, dating back to Mauritius back in December. So Gerard, Jason Day, Matt McCarty, Andrew Putnam share the runner-up honors as Scottie Scheffler ends up winning by 4 strokes and just a dominant performance. And it was almost one, Matt, where it's like, you know what? I'm willing to take a little bit of a stand against him, but sometimes in horse racing, of course, the famous horse track is Del Mar down there in San Diego. It's like sometimes a Baffert first timer runs like a Baffert first timer. And that was Scottie Scheffler. Sometimes the chalk is the free square and the pick six. And he certainly was last week in the Coachella Valley.
It is unbelievable what this guy is doing. And of course, on a season where we just get going, already a win under his belt, Wes, we're probably going to be talking about four or five more before the end of the season. I mean, it's just, unless, again, injuries are always a part of this, and certainly that could afflict Scottie Scheffler, but Scottie was winning when Scottie couldn't putt, and Scottie can freaking putt now, and that is bad news for every single person that plays in a tournament that sees his name on the tee sheet.
Yeah, no question about it. So fortunately, you don't have to deal with him until Phoenix next week.
Yes.
For the waste management, where he actually won his first PGA Tour event. I was proud to say I was actually aboard for that one. And I have hardly cashed on him since because the prices just haven't been right. But Scottie Scheffler returning to TPC Scottsdale next week. But first action, Torrey Pines, which, oh, by the way, one thing before we break down the field and the course and what we did in the models, back to a Thursday, Sunday, because it had been the day starting earlier and then they would end it on Saturday because they did not want to compete with NFL Conference Championship weekend. So you'd always have Jim Nance like doing it on remote because he'd have a football game. No problem this week because, of course, we are now in the first of the fortnight leading up to Super Bowl 60. So no football competition this weekend for San Diego.
Yeah, down there, a course that we are very, very familiar with. We've seen a couple of U.S. Opens here as well to go along with what we see with the Farmers. And, it is going to be the two-course rotation for the first couple of days, mainly to get it to make sure that everyone can finish here because you still – there's the chance, though the weather doesn't look like it, but, I mean, there's always that chance of that marine layer, the fog layer, and then you get the fog delay, and then people don't get finished and all that. So they played on both the north and the southwest, and so everybody will have their chance to try to go low out there on the north before they head over to the south or vice versa, whatever it is. Start out on the south and have a chance to go low on the north on Friday. But it is a course that plays several strokes easier than the south, and it's like if you're playing first round leader stuff, if you're playing any of that, whatever, if you're playing DFS like single slate, you know, the showdowns that they do for single round stuff, just load up on North Coursers. That's the way to go with that because it is exponentially easier than the South.
And this is a long ass course, this South course. It is the longest regular course on the PGA Tour, 77-65. So it's not just that. It's the reason why they got to have two courses, man. You got a long walk with 147 players, by the way. Now they even that out to make the threesomes even with the inclusion of Brooks Koepka in the field. So That's a lot to get through. This is a long day on that South course. Even with the weather being looking pretty benign, the wind looks basically non-existent. And we've seen when the wind can blow, like last year, I thought the weather conditions were very tough. And that's why you saw Harris English, who we were aboard, fortunately, last year at 100-1. 8-under par was your winning score. So there was definite weather considerations, but this looks like maybe a little bit more low to mid-teens this week is going to get it done. 13-under, which was the winning score in 24 when Matthew Pavone won, when Max Homa won in 2023. So I would expect that we're going to see around that this week.
Yeah, it is anyone that's watched any of these tournaments out there knows famous for the rough length and how difficult it is to play out of the rough on there. Certainly the South course where we'll see the majority of the rounds, you get the POA greens that can get beat up throughout the course of the day. You don't get that, by the way. It's not POA greens over on the North course. So like you actually get a better putting surface on the bent grass over on the North course. One of the few here, you know, I've been fortunate enough in this little golf journey that I've taken over the last 3 years, Wes. I've actually played both of these courses, played both of them multiple times. Actually, I've been to a few different tournaments down there, including the U.S. Open. So I'm pretty familiar with these courses and how they play and how crazy it can be when you do end up in this rough sometimes and all that, which is why I'm sure whenever we break down all of this, it's no joke. When it's a long course with bad rough and all of that, we're going to favor bombers because even if you miss, you're going to be way further down and it's way easier to hit a 8-iron or a 7-iron out of this rough than it is if you've got to hit a 6-iron or a 5-iron or whatever and all of that. And so it's not that the the positional dudes can't win, Wes. It's just they're just at a disadvantage because of the length of this thing and the teeth.
They are, and you mentioned this, of course, for those listening to the audio version of this podcast, I have my 2021 U.S. Open hooded tee. I was down there at Torrey Pines for a round that year where John Rahm got home for us, thanks to Louis Oosthuizen and hitting one like almost clear to Del Mar off the tee late in that round. But you know, the North course and the South course, there's usually a difference. There wasn't much last year. It was about a 1.12 stroke difference harder on the South course than it was on the North. And that was because of the weather. But I've got something in the column that's going to go up at beeson.com Tuesday afternoon, where you could see there's a 3-stroke difference from the North course to the South course. There has been 3.5 strokes in previous years. Of course, we mentioned that 2021 U.S. Open. That's where they did the renovation. Reese Jones did the renovation, and they made this course a little bit longer. And now it's 77-65. So the North course is certainly, I think, where you definitely want to take advantage to at least get yourself in position on the weekend. Torrey Pines South,
down
by the way,
in 2024, so 2 years ago for the Farmers. And so Kevin Yu went out and shot the opening round low on the North course. I think it was 64. And he was 10 strokes worse the next day. The next day on the South course, like literally 10 strokes worse than he was the previous day on the North course. So I was like, oh my God, that's the difference it can make moving from one to the other.
Yeah, no question about it. And Torrey Pines, by the way, was the second most difficult course on the tour last season. The average score was 73-69, so almost 1.7 strokes over par. The rough is still going to be 4 inches. Only one water danger. You would think at San Diego, okay, there's water, there's the ocean all over the place. Not really. Yeah. On this course, if you've ever been to Torrey Pines South, 82 bunkers on the course. Of course, we mentioned the fairways, well, some of the more narrow ones, I think 33 yards on average. They have actually been a little bit widened to what they were a couple of years ago. Kukuya grass, ryegrass, overseed, small greens, by the way, on this course, too. I'm referring to the South course, of course. Fifth smallest at about 5,000 square feet, and they're POA as opposed to the bent grass that are a little bit slower and larger that you get on that Tom Weisskopf design on the North course, which plays, I believe, 72-58 is what the North course is going to be. So, yeah, definitely got to score on that North if you're playing first-round leader. Doesn't, you know, it's happened before where a leader's been from the South on day one, but not all that often. So you probably want to have more North guys if you certainly are playing that first round leader market.
As Wes mentioned, no Scottie Scheffler this week. So at the top of the odds board, Xander Schauffele, Ludvig Åberg, Cam Young, Patrick Cantlay, Siwoo Kim, Chris Goddard, JJ Spaun. These are the odds over at DraftKings, by the way. Those are all the guys that are at least sub 30. Then we move into that next tier of kind of that 30 to between 30 and 50, in which you get some very familiar names. Hideki, Matt McNeely, Jason Day, Harris English, Taylor Pendrith, Keegan Bradley, Jake Knapp, Michael Thorbjornsson, Ryan Gerard, who Wes just mentioned having a very nice little run right here, Adam Scott, Wyndham Clark, Rasmus Højgaard, Will Zalatoris, and then once we get to 50, you land on Max Homa. It is a profile statistical here, Wes, that has been pretty tried and true for more times than not. And certainly when you just look at what you know, the top 10s and top 20s, the leaderboard's littered with long hitters, guys that are good with long irons and things like that. We've seen guys that are good at scrambling because of, like you mentioned, the smallish greens over on the south side. So you might be needing to get up and down to save par. I mean, par is going to be a decent score on a fair amount of these holes out there, which is kind of how I went about putting the model together this week, right? Which was just long dudes, long irons. Do you have a little bit of scrambling in your bag? And that's kind of the foundation for me. I know we always talk about approach, but I think for me, I kind of want the dudes to be longer first and foremost, and then we can kind of get to the approach after that.
Yeah, and to add to the statistical content, if you want to go a little bit trends or any kind of angles here, mostly experienced guys have won here. Guys in their late 20s or 30s and beyond, guys that have won on the PGA Tour. It is very rare that you get a first-timer here. We certainly had one a couple years ago with the Frenchman, Mathieu Pavon. But by and large, experience, long-term course knowledge, I think 15 of the last 17 had at least made a start in the calendar year. We do have some guys, including some of the shorter price guys, that are making their season debut this week. So usually you need an event under your belt, whether it was the Century or the Sony or the American Express. 21 of the last 24 have played in at least five Farmers Insurance Open events. 18 of the last 21 had at least one top 10 finish, because one thing I want to get into before we get into the stats is, if you look at like form, like player form, and you're going on a grid somewhere and saying, okay, how have they done here in previous years? You kind of get most of the guys a little bit all over the place. There's some consistency, guys that always make cuts, but that doesn't mean that they're always like top five, top 10, top 20. It might be, okay, finish ninth and then finish 46th the year before. Yeah. And you've had good players that have won here that have missed cuts. So this is one that is very hard, I think, to kind of find form, partially because some years you get some funky weather, but the fact that this is a long course, and like we mentioned, Xander Schauffele at the top, the shortest price, the San Diego State Aztec, you would think, oh man, he's going to be an ace here. And he's made cuts recently, but, you know, has missed some cuts here. Is not like, I think he was in contention one time. He was part of that host that was tied for second in 2021 when Patrick Reed, who's not the longest hitter off the tee, but putted the lights out and scrambled his you-know-what off, ended up winning that by a few strokes over a host of players in second. So you'll get some erratic form from some of these guys. JJ Spahn, who's also a San Diego State Aztec, has missed, I think, the cut here three of like the last 5 years or four of the last six. So you will get some oddball like stat lines or form lines here if you're looking at that.
So one of the guys at the top of the board, also Ludvig Åberg, who has won on this course. It was when the tournament had to move down from LA because of the fires, but did withdraw last week, Wes, and it was an illness. And I'm going to go out on a limb with absolutely no inside information. Ludvig is one of those guys that was sponsored by American Express. And it feels like to me, he went, shook some hands, kissed some babies, did what he needed to do to fulfill his obligations, but really wanted to get more prepared for this tournament on a course where he has had some success.
Didn't he go through this, by the way, and I know we're going to get to our players later, so I'm not trying to give anything away, but he was somebody I certainly considered this week. Didn't he have that last year where he started off hot and then got sick and didn't really fare well in the Farmers? Actually, all of us on this podcast did hit on this course. I had English in this one. You guys had Ludvig at the Genesis Invitational, where he came right back. It's like, oh man, how's this illness going to affect him? And then he wins the thing and birdies like four of the last five on Sunday to win at the Genesis. The Genesis, by the way, if you're looking at that, that was played exclusively at the South course. There was no round at the North course because it got moved because of the California wildfires. It's usually at Riviera. That's where we anticipate it's going to be in a couple weeks. So I didn't know how to treat Ludvig in terms of that illness. I think you're probably on the right track, Matt, where you're talking about, was he like really in the mix? And, you know, he kind of did right by the sponsor, and now let's go back to a course where he's seemingly taken to it very well in his young career.
Yeah. And again, this is just a guess, reading tea leaves. Like, he played the two easy courses and was at 9 under, which is not like terrible, but it's not, you know,
it was kind of borderline cut. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like he was about to have to go to the stadium course, where it was obviously the played tougher than all the other ones. If he had any sort of anything bothering him, I think maybe that could be what we're dealing with here. That being said, all of that, long story short, again, like you said, not to give you the way, I did not end up on Ludvig. So I am probably more skittish than some on the whole injury / illness / whatever is going on in people's personal lives thing and all of that, mainly because golf is so freaking mental.
Right.
That, like, if there's something going on that could even mess you up for a shot, you know, one shot can bury you in a golf tournament. You know, unfortunately, one shot can bury you in a golf tournament. So yeah, I did not end up on Ludvig. He very well could go win this thing, but that's just not where I went with everything. So, Wes, I tipped my hand here on kind of where I went with the model. Really prioritized driving distance, total driving. Really looked at par five scoring. They're the only holes where these dudes are going to maybe get at least an average under par. All the other holes are going to play over par on the South course, and so certainly need to at least not bogey those, and hopefully you can turn some of those into some some birdies and whatnot. And then after that, you know, more tiebreaker stuff, a little bit of scrambling. But as we kind of always say, like, if you're hitting the greens, then you'll have to scramble. So there's that. I mean, that's really good. Long iron stuff for me here too, but really did kind of go, not saying all in, but did go in on kind of the drivers here and seeing what these dudes with some distance can kind of show up in the model for me.
I started out with total driving too, and I didn't want to change what I did last year because we ended up having Harris English pop out of it. So it's like, well, I hit it last year. Do I really want to adjust all that much? And I didn't. I started with total driving. Yeah. I know some will go with strokes gained off the tee. I feel you got to take away a little bit of the accuracy or add that a little bit here because it's only about 52%. So you're going to miss almost half the fairway. So I went with some total driving where Harris English was really top of the heap going into the tournament and then was obviously very good in 2024. So I used some total driving, did rate scrambling a little bit higher than I usually would. Five of the last six, by the way, were eighth or better during their winning weeks. And Harris English actually led the field for his victory last year at 800 par. So I did look at scrambling approach. I think you have to kind of include it because you're going to miss some of these narrow fairways. So you got to be good, not only out of the fairway on approach, but out of the rough. So you still got to, I still think you got to take in some iron play and especially the approaches from over 200 yards. Mm-hmm. It's about a third because you mentioned at the top about long irons. You got to be good with those things here because you're going to have a third of them come from 200 yards and out. So you're going to have to get those guys where you look and it's like they're going to hit it to 40 feet. And then are they good on the approach putts where they get it to 3 feet and don't have to worry about those bumps on the POA greens, which I also did include here. I think you had to include a little bit of strokes gain putting POA because you're playing three of the four rounds here. And they're pretty fast, actually. 12 and a half on the stem. Bumpy, unpredictable. This is not like the East Coast POA that you would see at the Travelers where it's pretty smooth. Mm-hmm. Like here and at Pebble Beach, you know, you're going to get some weird bumps and you're going to see these pickup speed where it's like it looks dead good and it goes 5 feet by the hole. So you're going to see that a lot here. It's going to be frustrating. A little bit of bogey avoidance here. You can drop shots in a hurry, even though I don't think you're going to see single digit under par win this thing like last year. So took that into account. Par fives, you know, not a lot of birdie holes necessarily. Yeah. On this course, like you get a 67 or a 68, that's a hell of a good round on the South course. So got to take advantage of those par fives. Did a little bit of strokes gain hard courses as well, and also long courses, 7,700 plus yards, of course, here. So that's pretty much where I went. Is very similar to what I did last year. Didn't want to reinvent it too much, but you could go a couple different ways here. But I think starting off the tee and total driving, I felt was the best way to go, is probably a good baseline here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just, you know, for me, I look at this and it's very tough for me to see a route with the way that looking like the weather is, with it looking like it's going to be pretty good weather. If you don't have it off the tee, it seems like it's going to be a tough road to getting home and all the, like you said, the weather is the great variable where it can neutralize a lot of that stuff, but it seems like we're going to be getting great weather and if great weather and they are able to kind of like rip it and go to town on this. I mean, highest driver percentage, I think, of any course on tour, you're getting like, and the other thing you mentioned, Wes, too, is just like, you know, not that this equals that you're going to make the putt or something, but like the closer to the hole that you can be, the better. I mean, like I think it's the top miss rate under 5 feet on tour as well because of just those weird greens and all of that stuff. So like I don't want too many 12 footers, you know, like, I don't want too many like 14 footers if I can keep from it, you know, because where we see those go in like half the time on tour, like it's probably not here.
Yeah, your lag putting is going to have to be important here where it's almost like you don't want to be 12 feet. You want to be like 30 or 40. Because you can lag it down there and then probably feel 2 to 3 feet, I've got a good chance at par, whether 12 feet and you knock it 4 or 5 by and then you got a knee knocker coming back. So that's actually a good point. Or you can just be like Scottie Scheffler and knock it to like 2 to 4 feet every single time, like you did on Sunday.
They're so glad he's not in this tournament. Like
honest with you, because I got the tweet on my record, because of course that's how you evaluate futures performance, is like record. It's like, hey, every week you're going to have a losing record, by the way.
Yeah.
If you're betting futures, unless you're 1-0. So I got reminded I was 0-8 because none of my guys did get home on the outright last week. So make that 0-15, but placement markets, at least small ham sandwich on the plus. But yeah, I'm glad to not have to fade Scottie Scheffler again. That has not been going well. Now we have that next week, of course, in Phoenix. But at least we got, I think, a little bit more of an open field here in San Diego.
Yeah, it is. It is one of those. It's one of those things for me where, Xander at the top. Is he the best player on the field? Probably, but like,
hasn't been now. Like, he's been okay. Yeah. But you would think, like, Xander Schauffele, a player of that caliber, okay, this is like almost a home game for him, like it was in kind of the past when, like, Tiger was here, when Phil was here, when those guys were at the top and they won here all the time. Really, he's only contended here one time. And he's regularly going to play here, of course, because he lives in and is from San Diego, but never really has been all that dominant here.
So I've threw all the stuff in there and spit it all out. And you know, Wes, I didn't expect to start as low on the board as I did, but Cam Young just really lit up. I mean, I did a 2-year model. I did like a 60-round model. I did like a 30-round model. And then like you, I went back and like reran the model where we got Ludwig home and got the whatever and all that stuff. And like, Cam Young's just in the top three, like every single version of every single thing. Like, I know 22-1 on Cam Young is something you don't love, but I think maybe he's turned the corner here. You know, I mean, we joked forever about betting him and never winning and betting and never winning and betting and never winning. Well, he's got the win now, and you just look and his stuff, and maybe it's, if you feel more comfortable with a top 10 bet, that's fine. I'm not going to talk to you all that. Like, it's just littered with top 10s. I mean, the guy's like always in contention. And so maybe I'm going to hope that he's gotten that kind of winning thing behind him and he can just go win. And there's no longer this like, how's he going to blow it? It's more like, oh, he's going to go win a tournament. And so I started with Cam Young at 22-1, and I'm perfectly fine if people would rather play him in the top 10 market. I think he has a great chance to at least finish high on the leaderboard.
I am going to play him in a placement market. I did not bet him outright. He certainly was a consideration because I do, and I'm always a Cam Young truther here. Did finally get that win at the Wyndham. Was really one of the only bright spots on the Ryder Cup team. I thought he made a nice showing of himself despite another American defeat in the Ryder Cup. But Cameron Young is a guy that I feel is going to win a big one this year. Like, he's going to win a monster, whether it's a signature, whether it's a major. I feel like he's going to do that now. I feel like he's got the confidence and he's got the monkey off his back. I didn't play him this week because he is kind of going off the boil here. First start of the season. And look, he's a player of the caliber that he can buck that trend. But Cameron Young, I do think, is poised for a very good year here after he had those 7 runner-up finishes in 3 years prior before he got home at the Wyndham. So he's one of those guys, and I think he's being priced accordingly, that I think we anticipate that he's going to have a very big year.
Yeah, it's I think too, we've been talking about him for so long that like, we don't really, I mean, he's only 28, it's like, it's not like,
it seems still, like he's in his late 30s.
Yeah,
it's
like,
it
still seems a relatively like young dude. And like you mentioned the Wyndham, and then it's like 5th at the FedEx and then 11th at the BMW and 4th at the Tour Championship. And then the T9 at the Pro Corps, he went over the Hero World Challenge. He was 10th there. I think that he's a guy, like you said, I think this might be a year in which I end up on Cam Young a little bit more than I think I would have normally. So like I said, I didn't think I'd start that low on the board, Wes, but I started the card with him.
Yeah, I think a very good place to start. And look, he's one that I think I have a little trepidation not going with. Another guy in that regard that I'm not going with this week, but who's already won this year, Chris Goddard. I have no reason to think that he can't fit this course. He's a guy that can hit it. They can hit it a long way. 30-1 and is starting to be a consistent winner. I did not play him. Maybe I look at him in like a top 20 or a top 30. But I started out kind of in the same price range with the guy that can't really say he's in good form because he hadn't won in like 3.5 years. But Patrick Cantlay, I played it 25-ish to 1. I think 24-to-1, 22s are out there as well. Led the field in scrambling last week, settled for T13 at the Amex. He's not really been a guy that's played here a lot, considering he's a Southern California native, but fourth on this course last year at the Genesis. I don't think he's like played horrible golf. Like, I don't think his game's gone off a cliff, and I have one that I played, more on that later. A guy whose game seemingly gone off a cliff. He was top 10 in total strokes gained last year, just not winning, just not putting it all together. Some weeks, like, the driver works and then the approaches are a little bit off, or the driver's a little bit off, but the approaches are awesome and he putts well. He's familiar with these Poa greens. I think that's going to could give him a leg up on the field. Like, he's a guy that, And he's not a bomber, but he's not a short hitter either. Yeah. You know, I feel like he's a driver putter. I feel like those are the best two clubs in his bag. And if he could just get everything firing at the same time, like, this is a guy that's won eight times on the PGA Tour. This guy is a really good player, but you do feel like the win equity, and we talk about that all the time on this pod, it should be better. It's not there, right? Granted. So you can make that case like, hey, man, this guy just hadn't been able to get it done, but. You know, I think maybe, you know, we're going to see him sooner rather than later win an event, kind of, you know, get that monkey off his back a little bit.
That it really, he's just too good of a player to not win. He's just too good of a player to not win. Hopefully he can get that done for you here. I went a little bit further down then with my next guy, and this was a model darling. You go in, there's some history here. I think his game, for everything that we talked about from what we modeled, just fits so well. And Jake Knapp, it comes in for me 45-to-1 over at MGM. A guy that just literally drives the absolute hell out of the ball. You go in, scores on par fives, which we said is at least somewhat important to us in this one. I mean, listen, there are a couple of warts on Jake Knapp for sure. If you go in, he can spray it from time to time, and that is a little bit worrisome in this rough and all of that. But obviously a bomber, averaging 323 yards off of the tee over his last 60 rounds of golf. I mean, this guy can get it out there, get it going, and you know, I need some of the run good here. But you get a guy in Knapp that, Wes, you just look, and it's like, when he runs hot, he's going to be in contention, right? Like, when he's green across the board, and we talk about this from our statistical stuff that we get from our friends, you know, at the various stat providers and stuff. Green across the board at the 3M, he was T3. Green across the board at the Rocket, he was T4. You know, like, you see this stuff. Green across the board at the Cognizant, he was T6. And it's just like, anytime that he has it going, he's competing, right? Like, to win the thing. And so, hopefully he can put it all together for me here this week.
And he does, you know, in a sad way, aside from all the statistical superlatives that you pointed out, kind of fits that narrative streak. Because sometimes you see those, like, hard luck stories get home. And, of course, we know Jake Knapp, his girlfriend passed away last September. So, you know, it would be certainly, you know, anyone's going to be an emotional after you go through something like that in your life. But, And he does a 17th and 32nd here, by the way, last year at the two events, and then was third on debut. So some guys can go well on debut, even though the trends talk about experience. So he popped in a couple. I did not play him this week, but he was certainly a guy that I think is worth considering. I went a little bit in that same range for my second selection, a little bit shorter, but I went with the guy that's played pretty well here in the past, Maverick McNealy, 35-to-1, runner up here to Ludwig at the Genesis. Cause I think I was on McNealy. I know you guys got it on with Ludwig, and Ludwig, four birdies last five holes, played great and was much the deserved champion. But McNealy didn't win last year. Remember, he won at the end of 2024, but runner up here, three thirds, three other top tens, and mostly signature events. So just kind of was on the outside looking in for the American Ryder Cup team. He was actually top 10 in the official world golf ranking at one point last spring. So McNealy, I think, has kind of proven his mettle a little bit more as a top end player on the tour. Just needs to get a few more wins. Grew up in California, man, the guy is really good on Poa greens if you're really looking at those guys. Because I know sometimes we're team no putt and sometimes we're team putt. Yeah. I usually include a little bit of it. I think this week with those Poa greens, he's one of the top guys in the field on these, because growing up in Southern California, he's so good. Other guys that did profile, I'm not saying I bet them, but Pearson Cootie putts very well on these greens. One that I did play also putts very well. Wyndham Clark, Andrew Novak, Andrew Putnam, Sahith Sagala, Akshay. Those are guys in recently that have putted very well on Poa. So if you're looking at that stat category.
Yeah, I call me a sucker. I'm trying to be early. I don't want to play catch up here. The long-term model loved him. The short-term model, that middle, not so much. But I played Max Homa. I mean, it was, you know, again, I ran that two-year model, and he's way up there because obviously he was playing way better golf 2 years ago than he did over the last kind of like year or whatever. But then you look at some of the short-term stuff, Wes, and it seems like kind of pointing in the right direction. You go into that fall swing, nothing like where he was super competing, but a T19, a T18, a T9, a T27 last week at the Amex. Like, it seems he's starting to put it all together. We talked about the big equipment change last year with him. We talked about the mental stuff. He actually talked about the mental stuff that was going on with him and wondering whether he was any good at golf anymore and all of that. And, you know, I think he's just a too talented of a guy, very familiar with the course, obviously had some success here as well, California kid, all the different things that goes along with the stuff that we like. And honestly, I just think his game is coming back around again. And so, you know, Homa was down when he was on that run. Homa was in the high teens, low 20s, you know, mid 20s and stuff. And now 53-1 at Circa, if you're in a Circa market out there. I just want to kind of get ahead of maybe him turning the corner with his game. And so I ended up on Homa.
Yeah, he was certainly a consider for me. And of course, he is a former champion here. So that's not anything to sneeze at. So he won here, by the way, back in 2023, 13 under. I think he's like 22-1. So now you're getting him kind of in that mid range where I think he probably should be priced. Mm-hmm. And I will go to the mid range because I played a couple here. You mentioned a guy that, you know, was playing pretty great and then kind of lost it a little bit. I got another guy that's like that. And I just mentioned him a minute ago, Wyndham Clark, 50-1, yeah, who really didn't do a lot last year, had a couple top fives. You know, the biggest thing he did last year was trash his locker at Oakmont during the U.S. Open, where he got banned from the property unless he paid for the damages and donated to charity. I don't know if that has happened yet or what has gone on, but he showed a little bit of life at the end of the year. He was eighth in the Hero, and I know that's not that impressive when you got like 20 players, but was the first and second round leader down there in the Bahamas, and then was 13th at the Amex, where he was on the first page of the leaderboard for a lot of Sunday, shot 64 on the most difficult course, I think on Friday, the Pete Dye Stadium course, and then 72, just never really got anything going. And I don't punish a guy if he kind of has a mediocre round, because it's probably like you're seeing Scottie Scheffler up there and like, yeah, I got to take some chances a little bit. Yeah. So that 72 easily could have maybe been a 68, and he gets a better place than 13th. Two-time winner in the California, of course, won at the LA Country Club at the 23 U.S. Open. Hit him at the 2024 Pebble Beach, which was rain shortened, where I think he shot 60 on that Saturday. It was a 54 hole because they had a bunch of storms in that Monterey area that year. I think he's a good fit on these longer kind of classical designs like Torrey Pines. Remember, he won at Quail Hollow a couple years ago. So he kind of seems to fit. I thought he was worth a flyer in that mid-range. Another mid-range at the same price, who certainly doesn't have the pedigree of Wyndham Clark. I played a little Sam Stevens, who was runner-up here to Harris English last year. Actually, I might have gotten fortunate with that 100-1 shot because he still had the opportunity to win, and he was on the bad end of the draw in terms of the weather and whatnot. Still had a chance to win, just couldn't make a birdie down the stretch. Seventh at the RSM to finish 2025. T6 last week at the Amex. Made the cut here all four times. So we've got a couple more actually on the card that are not winners yet on the PGA Tour. But I thought Sam Stevens profiled pretty well here.
I went kind of a little bit further down, but not much here. 56-1. You can find that on DraftKings. Again, model darling. I dug in a little bit further. A lot of the stuff that ticks all the boxes that we're talking about. I'm going to one of the Højgaards, Wes. I'm going with Nikolaj as opposed to Rasmus. I'm going Nikolaj Højgaard. Inside the top 16 in all of those models that I ran, and you dig in and you can just see some stuff that really starts to jump off the page as to why he is as high as he is in all of this. Now, there are some warts as well. He makes a lot of bogeys. And if you put in like bogey avoidance in your model, it's going to drag his ass down like way far because he is not necessarily a clean player. But certainly when we talk about just skill sets and stuff that they could succeed at a tournament like this, he's got that in spades. If he can keep from having a disastrous day with his putter, which is really what drags him down in tons of these things, you look at these tournaments and it's like a T52 where he loses 5.8 strokes putting, right? I mean, like, that's just insanity. And like, you go in a T11 in the DP World Tour Championship, Wes, in which he lost 2.5 strokes play. It's like, if he could get just be even on all these things, who knows? We might be talking about a multi-time winner just in the last 12 months or so. But, you know, again, only he's young, 24 years old. I mean, like, you learn along the way and you get better and you figure out how to improve your game and all of that. And another guy that I'm hoping I can be out in front of here. And so I'll take the Nikolaj Højgaard here at a pretty big price.
I don't know if this would be maybe a third of a pod play or a half of a pod play, but it is the same country. We're going to stay in Denmark here. And I played Rasmus, but it was Rasmus Nergard Petersen at 80-1 who played the Dubai Swing 45th and 19th. So not much a note, but he ended December 2025, won his first DP World Tour event at the Crown Australian Open, won by one over Cameron Smith. That's co-sanctioned with the PGA Tour of Australasia. This was a guy that he was one of the 10 from the DP World Tour that earned PGA Tour cards. And some of those guys, you know, they were a lot more missed than they were hit, I think, last year. But four top fives. Remember, he won three tournaments the year before on the Challenge Tour, which is kind of like what the Korn Ferry is, only in Europe. Was runner-up in Qatar. Was Qatar. I always get that wrong.
Whatever.
Was also runner-up in Puerto Rico at the alternate event at the Puerto Rico Open in his rookie season. Birdied three of his last four in the final round at the DP World Tour Championship over at the Earth Course in Dubai. Finished T3 behind Rory and Matt Fitzpatrick, secured that PGA Tour card. Sixth for SGOTT last year, ninth tee to green on the DP World Tour. Maybe he's going to be like Pavone and be a European outlier. And we've seen some of these guys in recent years, some of these internationals that maybe don't win but do very well. Remember Aldrich Bob Podguider last year. And he had a disaster round on Sunday. So he ended up, I think, like 15th or something. But he was right there on the lead. And you get these big hitting European or even foreign players. Of course, Aldrich from South Africa. And you get these guys that, you know, just play well on these type of courses and really take to it. I think Nergard Petersen could be one, even though he doesn't have a lot of experience here. But a guy that does have a lot of experience here that I skipped over. Another guy that is not one, I mentioned Sam Stevens. It's hard to believe, man. This guy's 33 years old. It seems like he's been on the tour 20 years, actually since 2014. Patrick Rogers, 63-1. Third at the Sony. Now comes to an event where it's kind of, I mentioned at the top, difficult to keep consistent form, but he's managed to do so. Ninth or better in four of his last 9 years on this course. Was fourth at the Genesis. Hasn't gotten that win. God, it's a mystery because this guy had so much pedigree. He was the world number one amateur. Tied Tiger Woods for the most amount of events. Won as a member of the Stanford golf team. Veterans have fared pretty well here over the years. And I do think experience can matter. Maybe another grizzled veteran gets it home. So I took a shot with Patrick Rogers.
Well, I'm glad you had the guts to pull the trigger on Nergard Petersen. I didn't have the full, I took a top 20 on him. I did not pull the outright, but it's good to know that you saw kind of what I saw as well with him. By the way, if you, a top 20 still pays nearly 40, plus 360 out there for him to get a top 20. But Wes, in one of the models, 11th for me. Mm-hmm. For Rasmus Nergard Petersen, I mean, like a way, way high up there. And yeah. I was like, man, I got to pull the trigger on this guy in some way, shape or form. Didn't quite get there all the way, but I did do a top 20 on him. So you and I simpatico on Neergaard Pedersen.
On those ancillary stats.
Guy,
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to say on the ancillary stats that I, you know, we use Rick Rungood and Bet Spurts and a few others that we'll mention. On hard courses, like Neergaard Pedersen was number one. He was number one on long courses. Obviously, that includes some DP World Tour data, which maybe inflates it. But Neergaard Pedersen, I feel like he doesn't have the experience here, but man, he is a big course fit.
So the last one, I kind of went just on a little bit of gut, still modeled well. And Wes, I'm going back to the well. Certainly started well for us last week and faded off, but I'm going back to Pearson Coody. 10 under last week in the first round, and then shoots even par on day two. So just completely plays his way out of that tournament last week, but bombs it off the tee, like should be able to get out there and give himself some chances in all of this. I mean, we're talking over 325 average off the tee for this dude. If you look, pretty good on par fives, which we said we're looking for. Pretty good with long irons, as we said we're looking for. Now, one of the things that drags him down, if he didn't model well for any of y'all out there, scrambling leads a little bit to be desired. I put that in my model. And then for whatever reason, and this is kind of a – so because I don't know exactly what the statistic is drawn from or where the cutoff is, and honestly what the body – you know, what the sample size is too, but – for whatever reason, and you wouldn't think this with a guy that bombs it off the tee as much, but he's like 102nd on long courses, which I put into the model, which like I'm sure drug him down a little bit too, which I just thought didn't really match up with his skill set. And maybe, again, young kid. So like maybe that he can play out of that, or, you know, whatever. He gets better at all that. We're still only talking about a 26-year-old kid out there, you know. So I'm going back to the well with Pearson Coody. All the skill set stuff fits. It's just, you know, again, getting over the hump and all of that. So that's it for me on the outright card though.
I've got one more, and I've got a bomb for you, and I'm gonna tease it, and it's probably gonna be a pretty easy guess here. I've got a player, by the way, who was 22-1 in this field, the Farmers Insurance Open last year, did miss the cut, but also finished top 10 on this course at the Genesis Invitational. He's finished inside the top nine at Torrey Pines 7 of the last 9 years here. And this is a big leap of faith, and I'm going with a number. And, you know, this is surely going to blow up in my face. But I saw it at DraftKings, and it's still middle triple digits pretty much everywhere. How about Tony Finau at 180-1 this week? And I'm sure it's not going to go well. But I'm willing to take a shot here.
Yeah.
And why is he that big of a price? Well, he doesn't have a top 10 anywhere since in the world, since that Genesis Invitational, and his game has been shit. Let's be honest. It's been awful. And he's been well below standard. He missed two cuts already here in 2026. Now, he did apparently have ankle surgery in the fall, you know, and had that knee issue a couple of years ago. So he's working his way back. But man, sometimes you just need to go somewhere where it's familiar to you and you've got some previous success. So at least you're in a good frame of mind coming in, even though your form line is dreadful and all the stats. I could go up and down on the stats and say how bad they've been. He's coming to a course where he's always played well. And maybe that's what's needed here. And you always kind of see like this leaderboard, even when you have really good fields at here at Torrey Pines for the Farmers, you always kind of get some outliers in this event. If you really look historically, you always get some guys on that leaderboard that's like, oh my God, like where did that come from? And somebody that's kind of a contender in it. One that jumped out to me last year, Danny Willett was top 10 and was in contention here. And his game was like nowhere. And you looked at that with this field and guys that had just been very inconsistent. So I took a shot 180-1. I'm sure he misses the cut by 3 or 4. He's been bad, you know, missed the cut at the Amex, missed the cut at the Sony. But I'm going to go with Finau because there was a little bit of a trepidation, though, because he's always been kind of, you know, rumored for LIV.
Yeah.
We know that him and John Rahm are very good buddies. And, you know, he's got some friends there, also friends on the PGA Tour. So that's what's kind of kept me off Tom Kim a little bit earlier in the year, where I considered him a couple weeks ago, because I'm like, is he going to be on this all Korean team? in LIV, and that's what's kept me away. But I'm going to take a shot. It's obviously very small. You're not betting the same, a full unit on all these prices, priced proportionally like I do, like you do, Matt, like Kelly does. I think that's a smart way to go. Your placement markets are going to have to carry you a lot of weeks. And, you know, fortunately did for me last week with a small plus. But Tony Finau, 180-1, I decided to go ahead with him and then just take a shot. And it's like, oh, man, he's still playing because he's kind of like falling off the face of the earth.
So I'm not going to let you have the only triple digit then. A guy that I played a top 40 and a yes to make the cut, I'm going to go ahead and add the 250-1 as a little sprinkle on an outright. Probably has very, very, very little chance of winning this term. But so David Ford. David Ford has been pro for less than a year. He had incredible success in college and came out and then just got annihilated on the PGA Tour. We are talking, he got cut at the Charles Schwab, the RBC, the Rocket, the John Deere, and the Genesis all in a row. Then finally made a cut and finished 75th, got cut two more times. But Wes, like now a little bit, and played the Utah deal where he T3'd. He was T13 at the Amex last week. He was 50th over in the Sony. So maybe he's kind of putting some stuff together. But a guy that just profiles super, super well. Really, this is more of a top 40, more of a yes to make the cut play. But I want Wes to not be the only one to have a bomb out there. So I'm going to add a little bit of an outright here on David Ford. So David Ford here will be my huge bomb.
His amateur pedigree is outstanding. Was a ACC player of the year in North Carolina on all the Walker Cup and all those American teams. So his profile like really fits. And some of these young guys, you know, sometimes they win right away or sometimes it takes a while. But look, I could absolutely see it. I do want to give a couple, I guess we'll call them honorable mentions. One that didn't make the card, but might be placement markets. Of course, I did mention Goddard up earlier. Yeah. Of the shorter guys, I think he could profile. I'm not going back to the well with Gerard this week. You know, I know you're I'm tempted to because he finished runner-up 3 weeks in a row, and I think that means he's close to a win. It might not happen this week, though. I considered Shore Bornson, and he profiled very well. He actually modeled very well, but yeah. I feel like his win might be coming later in the year. So it's a little bit of trying to time it. Like, it's coming. I think all of us anticipate he's going to have a huge year. But Chor Borenson was certainly one that I did look at. There were a few other ones kind of in that. Andrew Novak, who I was on last week at the Amex, who actually was in contention here last year, wasn't able to get it done. Another guy that profiled very well on the model, but I'm like, is he really ready to win against a field like this in this event? Ricky Castillo, former University of Florida player, actually very well. And maybe that was a little bit of bias because of some of the fall numbers, but Ricky Castillo is a triple digit guy that I thought profiled very well. So at least those were a few honorable mentions for me.
Yeah, a few that I can throw out if you're like a DFS player and you're just kind of looking for stuff to round out a lineup or whatever. Some guys that modeled well, but I just didn't get them into the account. Actually, your guy Patrick Rogers modeled very well for me. Bezuidenhout modeled well for me in this one. Obviously, anytime I put an emphasis on driving and things like that, Taylor Pendrith is going to show up.
Yes. So
Pendrith makes an appearance. Garrick Higo, also another guy.
Yeah,
showed well for me in this. And then one other guy that I looked into a little bit more and then ultimately ended up passing on. I almost got to Justin Rose, like just the old, you know, old dude that's played the course a thousand million trillion times, whatever, and all this, and like might just know his way around and all that.
Has won here before 2019.
But the end of the day, it's like, man, you're 46. It's like you said, it's a grind. I mean, it's just a three of the four rounds on that really tough, long course. And I don't know. I didn't quite get there, but a guy that showed up kind of in the top 25 of the model for me, and given like, you know, his pricing specifically in like DFS and stuff like that, you know, would definitely at least be in the rotation for me if I was going to make a whole bunch of lineups or something.
Yeah, looking at that, he had won here in 2019. And if you look, and I always like to put the previous winners in the column up at VSiN.com just to give you some context. And some years it's bomber, 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 bomber. And sometimes it's approach, 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 guys. You get a little bit of a balance here because you've had some bombers like Bubba Watson, John Rahm, who certainly can hit it off the tee very well. And then you get like your scrambler types, your guys that are good approach around the greens, like your Brent Snedekers and your Jason Days. Mm-hmm. Luke List was a bomber here. And then a lot of the total driving guys, Harris English, historically very good. Max Homa, of course, Tiger profiled everywhere, and he was a multiple time winner here. But you do get, you've had some mix of chalk winners here, and you've had some mix of bombs. We've had two triple digit guys over the last couple of years. Pavone was 150-1 in 24. Harris English 100-1 last year. So you will get some of those. So I think, you know, don't go like too bomb heavy and don't go too short guy heavy. Kind of have a little bit of balance. Hopefully we got that this week because I think we got some balance cards.
I think the only guy that if he wins that I'm going to like be a little upset, JJ Spahn just popped in every single form for me all over the place. Like,
but you worry, is he, you know, my concern was, is he long enough, you know, like, but I think that he could do it here. And of course he did win at Oakmont, which was as tough as you got last summers, but he's never really surprisingly contended well here, but we've seen that before, guys, where you look at the form sheet and it's like, not all that impressive necessarily. His best finish actually was his first year. I think 2017, he was ninth, and then he doesn't have another top 10, but you never know. It would not shock me if he wins.
All right, guys, if you have not done so, if you're seeing us on the new YouTube channel, hello, appreciate the support. Hit that subscribe button. We do appreciate you guys coming in. Hit the little notification so every time we pop something up on the channel, it'll hit you. If it's over on the audio side, we still appreciate the subscribes, the rates, the reviews, all of that helps us stay employed over here doing this podcast for you. Wes's column up over at VSiN.com. We got all kinds of specials running right now if you want to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. So get in on that for sure. Hopefully Kelly will be getting better for you out there. He'll get his picks up over on the website so you can see what he is thinking about this one as well. For Wes, I am Matt. Good luck on all your farmers' bets.